tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 26th of March, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, last Thursday, I wasn't here, and I'm extremely grateful for my co-host producing a solo show for you, and I'm very thankful again to say today that he is here with us, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org, our resident geopolitical analyst. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing? How is life treating you?
Oh, I'm telling you, I feel better than I did before I went into the hospital. Of course, I have Stanley right here sleeping, guarding me, I guess. He's retired from MI6. Everything is folded into place, thank God. And our listeners have been extremely generous in a lot of different ways, and I want to thank them right now in public. It's a big deal to me.
Well, that's very good to hear. That is certainly good to hear, and you certainly sound to me to be a lot healthier and a lot more lively than you were leading up to your illness. And you've done a couple of podcasts on Iran, some very insightful podcasts on Iran, and I know you wanted to break with the mold today and do something completely different, and I'm really pleased you have, because this is a subject that I hadn't actually heard about until now. Parts of it I'd heard about, but not particularly how it's being applied in Hungary. Today we're going to be looking at the presidential election in Hungary, and specifically the European Union's election meddling against Viktor Orban, and we will be getting articles here for this from RT. 3 weeks out from the most consequential European election of the year, the European Union has aimed every weapon in its arsenal at Hungary as Brussels prepares for its best shot yet at taking out Prime Minister Viktor Orban with their hand-picked candidate, Peter Magyar. And I'll just stop there, because calling him Peter Magyar, it's rather like having somebody called Peter Saxon or Peter English or Peter American. And do you know if this guy is actually Jewish? Could he be a crypto Jew with a name like that, Matt?
Not that I've come across. I was struck by the name. This is the first time I'm coming across a Hungarian with Magyar in the name. I can't say definitively, but ideologically, he's all over the place. He's trying to be like Orban. Sometimes he's like him, sometimes he's not, you know. I can't say definitively if he's Jewish or not.
It just sounds suspicious to me, calling himself Magyar. Well, his animosity towards the EU establishment runs deep, and that's, of course, Viktor Orban, not Peter Magyar. For more than a decade, the Hungarian Prime Minister has often been the bloc's sole dissident, railing against its open-door migration policies, embrace of LGBTQ ideology, and the suicidal plan to welcome Ukraine into the Union. Orban has secured carve-outs from the EU's anti-Russian sanctions that enabled Hungary to continue purchasing Russian oil, and is currently vetoing a $90 billion loan package for Kiev. The European Union has responded by withholding funds equal to 3.5% of Hungary's gross domestic product over his banning of LGBTQ propaganda and refusal to accept non-European migrants. Now, this tells me that Orban has really got a lot of integrity, because his country is losing out financially for his principles, basically, for him standing for his country's principles. This shows to me that he's a principled man. With the future of its Ukraine project now on the line, Brussels has pinned its hopes on Peter Magyar and his Tisza party, which promises to overturn Orbán's domestic reforms and Budapest's opposition to the EU's designs in Ukraine and beyond. So it seems pretty obvious to me that the EU are backing the opposition here, and we'll learn more about the interference as we go into this. Do you know any more about this Tisza party, or more about this election before we get into the actual meddling, Matt?
Well, Magyar joined it not that long ago. It was, you know, it wasn't a huge party until he joined it. He's one of these guys who was a nobody for a long time. And for whatever reason, the regime, you know, wanted him to be like Navalny in Russia. You know, the only reason anyone ever heard of him is because of his alleged persecution. But Magyar, as I said, ideologically, he's all over the place. Sometimes he wants to sound just like Orban, but of course, he would be getting EU support if that were the case. But and this proves what I've been saying for a very long time, that ideology is far more important to the regime than money. I mean, they're already very wealthy, but to block money because he doesn't like LGBT nonsense shows you where their priorities are. And even more, and he's, you know, he's not alone anymore. You know, you have Slovakia. And carve-outs, meaning that he's just simply not going along with it. I think he should just, you know, figure out a way to leave the union. I think he will be reelected, but that's, well, we'll talk about that later. What they've tried to do to him over the years, we've spoken about it before, as is outrageous. And he's rejected everything that the regime is promoting. And Hungary is doing better financially than most of the EU.
Well, he is very well liked. He's extremely well liked as a leader. And the reason why he's against the LGBTQ is because you put that to the vote and they had a referendum. Do you want your children to be taught about transgender and LGBTQ issues in their school education? And the result of the referendum was a resounding no. So all he's literally doing by preventing that is enacting the will of the people. And the European Union are trying to thwart the will of the people and impose their own ideologies upon Hungary. And of course, Orbán won't stand for this, and that's why he gets so much support. Well, after the European Council failed to find a workaround to Orbán's veto on the Ukraine money at a March 19th meeting, the EU's chief diplomat, Kaja Kallas, hinted that work was underway on a Plan B. Based on the strategy playing out in Budapest, Plan B clearly involves a full-scale campaign of censorship and subversion to influence Hungary's April elections. On March 16th, European Commission spokesperson Thomas Regnier quietly announced that the EU had activated its Rapid Response System, the RRS, to, quote, combat potential Russian online disinformation campaigns, close quote, in the run-up to the Hungarian election. The mechanism will be active until 1 week after the vote. While most Europeans have never heard of this system, the RRS has been a key tool in the EU's censorship arsenal for years. It empowers EU-approved fact-checkers to flag online content as disinformation and then request its removal from platforms. Theoretically, platforms such as Meta and TikTok participate in the system voluntarily. All major social media companies have to sign up to the European Union's Code of Practice on Disinformation. However, a trove of documents published by the US House Judiciary Committee in Washington this year revealed that these companies were threatened, often explicitly, with punishment under the EU's Digital Services Act, the DSA. The DSA is now in force, giving Brussels fact-checkers the final say over what constitutes disinformation ahead of the election. And of course, the Digital Service Act has the power to fine these companies massive amounts of money. So it's hardly voluntary if they're going to get fined a massive amount of money if they don't remove whatever it is that Brussels says needs removing. These fact checkers, who remain anonymous, of course, favour Magyar. Over four European elections in which the rapid response system was activated, the Judiciary Committee found that fact-checkers almost exclusively targeted right-wing and populist candidates and organisations. Moreover, the requirement that these fact-checkers be approved by the European Commission creates a clear structural incentive for the participants to censor Eurosceptic opinion and content. So these fact checkers are put in place by the European Commission, and it should be a surprise to nobody that they then try to censor anybody that doesn't support the European Commission and the European Union. And to me, that seems inherently anti-democratic, and I'm glad that the House Judiciary Committee in America are drawing attention to this. Matt, what do you think of what we've just discovered here?
Well, remember, it was in 2016, the first Trump campaign, that the concept of fact checkers as an institution in the American media came into existence. These were just, you know, reporters or kids with laptops. And they people were mystified by this, that they decided what was a fact and what wasn't. Of course, everything was purely ideological. They are anonymous. And what gives them the right to decide what's disinformation is a separate issue. But this is, you know, this shouldn't surprise you. In the rule of an oligarchy, which is inherently conspiratorial, liberal and leftist in its ideology, you know, none of this should be surprising. I didn't need the Judiciary Committee to tell me that they only target right-wing candidates. Nationalist candidates is really what we're talking about here. And when you hear something like rapid response system, you think of a military thing. You think of a mobile police unit or something like that. No, it's these fact checkers that get sent out like hunting dogs with their laptops, and who knows what qualifications they have. I doubt they have any to tell the world what's a fact and what's not. How many people take that seriously? I don't know. Disinformation is simply, I mean, which they never actually define, like racism and all that stuff, within the documents here. They never define what disinformation is. And if it's something that they don't like, it must be from Russia. They never provide evidence. They never give, you know, they simply assert it. And, you know, I know we've said this many times before. They live in such a censored and sanitized world that they can't conceive of someone not accepting liberalism as the you know, as a fundamental ideology. They don't read our stuff. You know, at least not, you know, not the academic stuff anyway. All they know is caricature. They come across something, you know, anything. If it's remotely anti-EU or anything like that, it's disinformation from Russia. Which it's amazing how powerful this country has become. You know, starting in 2016, and they were saying this too in 2016. Just no matter how hard Trump was on Russia, he was still a Russian agent somehow. What's happening here reminds me of 2016. So many people getting kicked off, all social media, everything being censored. So, you know, the more naive really believe that, you know, there's only one point of view here. And they only understand nationalism through caricature. And that's, you know, that's the worst part of this. So, unfortunately, there, as you know very painfully, there is no First Amendment. I don't know what they would do with it. They would lose it if they had a First Amendment. And because of that, you can go to, you know, prison for this stuff. Companies can be fined huge amounts of money, as you said. The Code of Practice on Disinformation never defined the term. And the fact checkers, this is just, you know, this is simply, you know, major media, tech companies, either obeying this law, or frankly, I don't think they really need the law because they were doing this anyway. Digital Services Act isn't that old. So, you know, they were doing this anyway on a voluntary basis. So that means that they're trying to manipulate the election. And I just worry what happens if Orban wins, which is a very, very good possibility, what they're going to do next. And the fact that the rapid response is meant only for the election season, which, of course, again, is no surprise.
Well, that rapid response, I mean, what that's going to be is that's a direct line from the fact checkers to social media. So as soon as the fact checkers find something they don't like, they can tell the social media straight away. The social media then has to remove it. I think you bring up a good point there, Matt. You know, who checks the fact checkers? Who becomes the arbiters of truth? Effectively, they're saying, well, they are the Ministry of Truth. Now, America tried to put in a Ministry of Truth. It's one of the projects Joe Biden was working on. And it was turned down and Americans wouldn't stand for it. And we don't have a Ministry of Truth over here in Europe, but they're effectively saying that's what these fact checkers are. Now, it seems to me a much better system is what they have on Twitter, which is the community notes. If somebody says something which doesn't seem to be true, then people are free to then put up counter information. It becomes a community note. And if people can then vote on it, they can upvote it if they think that this note was helpful, or they can downvote it if they think the note is not helpful. Now, to me, that seems democratic. That seems a good way of trying to counter disinformation. I don't think it's a good way to counter disinformation to have just some arbitrary fact checker telling you what's right and what view is the correct view to have, and the other view is disinformation, because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about views. We're not talking about facts. We're talking about views. We're talking about the same data being looked at, but we might have a different conclusion to somebody else, and that's what they will call disinformation. Well, Hungarian MEP Dora David, a former Meta employee and member of Magyar's Tisza party, boasted last year that we've seen companies change their behavior based on the threat of Digital Services Act enforcement, citing Meta's removal of pro-Orban content as an example. The fact checkers can count on sympathetic staff within the social media companies after several members of Orban's Fidesz party claimed that Meta has already started restricting the reach of their Facebook posts. Commentators Joey Manarino and Philip Pilkington identified Oscar Brzezinski as the employee likely responsible. Brzezinski, who works as Meta's government and social impact partner for Central and Eastern Europe, has shared pro-Ukraine, anti-Orban and pro-LGBTQ content on his personal social media accounts. Fidesz, that's Orban's party, MEP Csaba Demota, said in Brussels on March 18th, the European Commission is outsourcing the task of content moderation to so-called external civil society actors, all of whom have a progressive orientation. Regarding Brzezinski's role in the censorship program, Zoltan Kovacs, a spokesman for Orban's office, said that having a highly politicized figure overseeing the region undermines platform neutrality and raises questions about potential interference in Hungary's election. So it's quite clear here that you've got biased people here that are these fact checkers. One thing that strikes me about this once again is what a wonderful name Orban's spokesman has, Zoltan Kovacs. I think I've mentioned that before. We've certainly heard from Zoltan before. He always has something sensible to say. Matt, what do you make of this?
Well, the author here said, you know, potential interference. And I wrote here, gee, I think so. Of course, that's the whole point of it. If you look at this Brzezinski's page, and it's actually in the original article, you kind of see what you're dealing with. One of the few, I guess he's, you know, sort of a fact checker, but he's the head of the fact checkers, I guess. he's every stereotype, what you would think would be doing this. And yes, I agree about the name Zoltan. There's a bunch of Zoltans in Hungary. Yeah, this is, you know, like everything else. Remember, if Orban wins, it's going to be this, you know, in the face of endless censorship, and God knows what they're going to do with the vote itself. I know Orban has got to be very, you know, concerned about that and has a plan in place. And it's quite possible that the regime is going to say that, no, he won dishonestly. He won because of Russian interference or something. And do what they did in Romania. That's really the big fear here. But this is what happens when you live in this bubble. You don't really know the opposition's point of view in great detail. And then when you come across it for the first time, it's oh my God. You know, especially if you're already, you know, on the left of the political spectrum. This is certainly ideological more than anything else. And as a referendum that you mentioned says, we know what Hungary thinks about this kind of stuff. You know, I don't believe the polls that have come out about this election. Polls are there to create public opinion, not reflect it. So, you know, if he wins, and I think he will, what they do next is really the big issue. What the regime does next, I mean.
Well, as you just pointed out there, it's not like they haven't done this before. The links between Magyar's party and Meta may streamline the European Union's censorship efforts, but Brussels is not above strong-arming platforms that refuse to play by its rules. This exact scenario played out in Romania in 2024, when Eurosceptic candidate Calin Georgescu won a shock first-round victory. Romanian and EU authorities immediately and without evidence declared that Russia had interfered in the election and had run a coordinated campaign on TikTok to help Georgescu win, and the election was annulled. The day after the annulment, TikTok wrote to the European Commission stating that it had found no evidence of a Russian-linked campaign in support of Georgescu, and that it had in fact been asked to censor pro-Georgescu content by authorities in Bucharest. This content included disrespectful posts that insult the ruling PSD party. The Commission pressed forward and demanded that TikTok make changes to its processes, controls and systems for the monitoring and detection of any systemic risks. That's an interesting term there, isn't it? Systemic risks. Risk to the EU system. Not disinformation, not facts that aren't actually true, but systemic risks is what they're concerned with. Threatened with legal action, TikTok rewrote its terms of service to ban misinformation that undermines public trust, media presented out of context, and misrepresentation of authoritative information. So something that undermines public trust, well, that would be criticizing the party that's in power. Media presented out of context, that would be pointing to statistics and showing what these statistics actually mean in your own context, not the context that they put there. And misrepresentation of authoritative information, well, again, that you can be talking about statistics. You can have the same statistics and you can say, well, this proves my point of view. And they're saying, well, if you say that, we need to get rid of that. Even though it's a completely valid point of view, they will say that that's a misrepresentation of the information, such as IQ. You could say, well, the IQ map of the world shows that in Africa they've got a lower IQ. And you could then say, well, it shows that black Africans, biologically, they have an IQ of 70. It's a biological thing. Whereas the authorities might say, well, that's a misrepresentation of authoritative information. Africa doesn't have very good schooling. So that low IQ is actually showing that they don't have good enough schooling there. It's not biological. Therefore, you're misrepresenting the authoritative information. So you can see there that there are two different ways of looking at this information. That's why it's important that you have community notes, which are it's like being peer-reviewed, so you can peer-review the information. Well, 10 days later, and despite its compliance, the EU opened formal proceedings against the platform for a suspected breach of the Digital Services Act in relation to TikTok's obligation to properly assess and mitigate systemic risks linked to election integrity. In Hungary and Romania, and in elections in France, Germany and Moldova, the EU has used the threat of Russian online disinformation campaigns to justify its activation of the rapid response system. Before the Digital Services Act, the European Union counted on platforms adhering to its voluntary codes of conduct, but the Act made these agreements legally binding. It allows the European Union to fine tech platforms up to 6% of their global annual turnover if they fail to restrict the dissemination of illegal content and address the spread of disinformation. Of course, it's not about the illegal content. That's just put there as a cover. It's about removing this, what they call disinformation, which can be completely legal, not breaking the law. Under the Act, the EU has pressured platforms to censor content ahead of national elections in Slovakia, the Netherlands, France, Moldova, Romania and Ireland, and during the EU elections in June 2024. And again, this reminds me of the censoring of the Hunter Biden laptop story with the Joe Biden election. It was for exactly the same thing, censoring content ahead of a national election. And surely that is the meddling with the election, not people having a different viewpoint on Russia. Platforms that fail to remove this content will be punished with enforcement actions under the DSA. And remember there, it's not illegal content. It's what the European Union had decided is disinformation. And that's exactly the same as the Online Safety Act that we have in Britain, which allows the British government to just say to a social media company, we want you to remove that. And if the social media company says, but there's nothing illegal about it, they can say, well, we think it's disinformation. Or we think it's legal but harmful, so you have to remove it anyway. I mean, it's absolutely blatant censorship and meddling in elections. What do you make of this here, Matt? I mean, it's like half a dozen countries here that they've used this process on.
This is how oligarchies work. I have many papers on this, both economic and political. When you have a system, which this is why I use the word regime with a capital R, to refer to the ruling classes. It's not just the state. It's many other actors working together, basically agreeing on what has to be done. But it also speaks to the bubble that they live in. Some of these people are shocked when they come across someone's anti-migration. You know, they've heard that for years as their ideology, as fact in the media and in academia. And just are, you know, this, you know, he has to be insane. He has to be crazy. Or it has to come from a foreign source. And this only happened with, you know, nationalist or Eurasianist Russia. No one ever made this claim. No one who mattered anyway made this claim about the Soviets. That was okay. The Gulag state was acceptable. The minute, Putin created a very different kind of state and resurrected what was a dying Russia in just a few years. Then it became a huge problem and a huge threat. But using the Russian disinformation over and over and over, I don't know if this was sort of a hypnotic thing, but how long, you know, even supporters of this nonsense, how long can you accept it? You know, and the media, of course, cannot, refuses, will not connect the obvious dots here. But telling them that won't fix anything because they're well aware of it. You know, the media has no obligation to be objective. They have no obligation to tell you the truth. And they have no obligation to educate you. A journalist is supposed to find a good story, a good angle to draw readers in. That's their whole thing. Scholarship is supposed to get to the truth. But, of course, that's been corrupted. So you have, well, people like me, handful of others, you know, voices in the wilderness, you know, having to deal with this, you know, election integrity. That you want to talk about pure projection here. This is a neurotic response to the fact that they're well aware that the oligarchy is unpopular. And that the American legislature, you know, the House, of course, the Republican, dove deep into these issues. That was a huge problem. You know, early on when Trump was first elected and Musk went over to the EU, the things that he said terrified them. You see, this oligarchies are conspiratorial by their very structure. They have to be. And being exposed is the one thing that they fear. Given the economic state of the European Union, which is an utter and absolute disaster, very unstable, this isn't the language of a system that's secure and strong. It's the language of a system that's very possibly near death. And that's, you know, it comes from weakness, not strength. And this is what happens. It's sort of like a cornered animal lashing out. This is what they're doing. And if this doesn't work, then, you know, there's possibly the next step of actual, you know, violence. And simply just, you know, having, nationalists all over the EU are in prison. I was just reading about it recently in Greece, and they can go even beyond that. So there are political prisoners all over the place. But major media and academia will never talk about it. And people, you know, kids, for example, grow up and go to school and go to college without ever coming across anything other than the regime's kept and embedded reporters and liberalism. So, you know, and these are the people we have to reach. This is the struggle. And although I think, you know, one of the benefits of being under the Iron Curtain was that they, you know, they distrust this kind of Western meddling. They're well aware of it. And so the means to control it in Romania, you know, this is the reaction was not what I expected. Of course, there were huge protests. I should modify that. But, you know, it's and the EU is in no real position. Russia is better off financially in pretty much every other way than the European Union is.
You know, I think what really unsettles them is an even playing field. I think that came out when we were told about the Russian election meddling in the Donald Trump election, the first election. And they had a big inquiry, didn't they? And the result of the inquiry was that the Russian meddling in the election was actually the news channel Russia Today. It was RT. Now, how is RT any different to the BBC? We've had the BBC for decades. And that's not seen as election meddling when the BBC puts its biased point of view out there on the world stage. But then as soon as Russia has its own news company, RT, that suddenly becomes meddling in elections. It's the same with Press TV that they banned in Britain, which was the Iranian TV news channel. It's like they don't want there to be an even table. They don't want it to be a fair game. It's the same with the internet. There's nothing stopping the EU putting out its information to counter the so-called disinformation of the Russian meddlers. But because their counter disinformation isn't plausible, are people going to support the party that the EU says are Russian meddlers? So it's not that it's meddling in the election. It's just that it's an even fair game, and they don't want there to be a fair game, and I think this proves all of it. Well, just over a week before Regnier announced the activation of the RSS, journalists at the Polish non-profit V-Square claimed to have uncovered evidence that Russian election fixers were working in Hungary to swing the election for Orbán. Why would Orbán need anybody to swing the election for him when he's won, I think, the last half a dozen elections? He's got masses of support from the people. 85% are pleased with what he's doing. why does he need anybody to swing the election for him? It's the opposition that needs somebody to swing the election for them. The outlet claims that Russian President Vladimir Putin had dispatched a team of political technologists from Russia's military intelligence agency, the GRU, to Budapest, where, working under diplomatic cover at the Russian embassy, they are likely running vote-buying networks, troll farms, and on-the-ground influence campaigns. What do they think the NGOs are that the West puts out all around the world? On-the-ground influence campaigns. It's the same as these NGOs. All Russia does is the same as the West does. The shadow campaign to swing the Hungarian election against Viktor Orban has escalated with the wiretapping of Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter Szijjártó. In an audio file released by Hungarian journal Mandina on Monday, opposition journalist Szabolcs Panyi can be heard telling a source how he passed Szijjártó's phone number to a state organ of an EU country. Once they had this number, he explained, agents of this country were able to extract information about who that number spoke to, and they could see who is calling that number or who that number is calling. In a Facebook post on Monday, Panyi confirmed that he was the person on the recording. He said that he was asking his source whether she knew of any alternate numbers used by Szijjártó or Lavrov, and I'm guessing by Lavrov they mean the Russian foreign minister, so that I could compare them with information received from the National Security Service of a European company. Panyi's confession explained how the European security officials were able to track Szijjártó's phone conversations before then feeding the information to Politico and the Washington Post. I mean, this is absolutely disgusting. Working with a foreign country's intelligence agency to wiretap one of your own politicians and then selling the information to the Washington Post. I mean, is that not meddling in elections? Is that not disgusting, treasonous behavior? I would have thought. Matt, what do you make of what we've just learned here?
Well, of course it is. And this is why I use, you know, neurosis, especially projection, when dealing with these people. You know, very commonly, media make a statement, you know, condemning a government or something or a group of people for doing precisely what they're doing. That can't be a coincidence. I mean, I have hundreds of examples I've written about over the last few years. I love how, you know, Putin's a big use for the GRU is to send them to Hungary. And of course, they've produced zero evidence, but it sounds like they know something. They'll talk about intelligence agencies. They'll talk about international intelligence agencies, you know, all over the EU and elsewhere, without actually giving any evidence. This is one of the reasons they have to censor. The other problem of living in a censored bubble is that you get soft intellectually. The wiretapping is, again, shocks nobody. I'm not sure about how the Hungarian media is treating this. I think they're a little bit more even-handed than the American. But everything that they're saying that Orban is doing, they are in fact doing. So it's reasonable and legitimate to say that there's a psychological motive here. They are election fixtures. And so they have to blame everyone else for it. But remember how it goes. Orban gets elected. It is inherently anti-democratic. That's, you know, democracy doesn't mean, you know, the act of voting. Democracy means liberalism. So, you know, when after Time Magazine had, what, a 9-page article when Trump lost to Biden, admitting the conspiracy to manipulate votes. They said it outright. It was almost like a release, like a catharsis for them. And no one talked about it. But this is clearly, if by somehow if Orban loses, we know there's nothing legitimate about this election. What he does after matters a lot. I'm not sure what he's going to do. And any conversation with Sergey Lavrov is going to be put under. And I know he doesn't know what's tapped and what isn't. This is a nasty crime. And we're going to read his response to this here just in a second.
Well, Orban immediately announced an investigation into the wiretapping, saying, "We are dealing with two serious issues. There is evidence that Hungary's foreign minister was wiretapped, and we also have indications of who may be behind it." Szijjártó explained that as the EU's longest-serving foreign minister, he regularly speaks to Lavrov with messages from his colleagues in the European Union. "The real scandal," he said, "is that a Hungarian journalist is colluding with a foreign secret service in order to wiretap a member of the Hungarian government. What makes this case even worse is that this Hungarian journalist is friends with the inner circles of the opposition Tisza party." The report cites multiple European national security sources without disclosing any further details or names. Magyar has repeated these claims in his speeches. After the Szijjártó story broke, he accused the foreign minister of betraying Hungarian and European interests and threatened him with life imprisonment for treason should his Tisza party win the election. Almost all of V-Square's published work, which includes investigations tying Orbán's government to Russian intelligence, as well as hit pieces on populist leaders Robert Fico in Slovakia and Andrej Babiš in the Czech Republic, is based on information provided by unnamed European intelligence agencies and interviews with NGOs. It is, of course, funded by grants from the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED, and financed by USAID, the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and two EU-backed journalism funds. Whatever the role these agencies played in concocting the Russian interference story, it served the dual purpose of giving the EU an excuse to switch on its censorship machine and giving Magyar political ammunition against Orban. Magyar laughably stated at a rally in Pécs on March the 8th, "Agents of Russia's military intelligence service, the GRU, are stationed in Budapest under diplomatic cover to influence the elections." He then led the crowd in chanting, "Russians, go home." It seems there's an epidemic of projection here. It does seem that that is the West's playbook now, and has been for many decades, is just to project your own crimes against your enemy and accuse them of doing exactly what you are doing. Matt, what do you make of this?
You know, the use of... Now, I've read some of these NGOs talking about these issues, and if it wasn't for anonymous sources, academic quote unquote experts, you know, they would have nothing. You know, it sounds very academic, but the only evidence they really put out are from those so-called sources. I know it's written strangely, but Magyar has repeated the claims of Russian interference in his speeches, of course. But the next sentence actually refers if you go to Wikipedia, let me put it this way, it'll say that Magyar accepts pretty much the same agenda as Orban does, which we know isn't true. Most of the time, he's trying to sound as much like Orban as possible, which is his strategy, which suggests that he's well aware of how popular Orban is. He allegedly claims that wants strict regulation on migration and things like that, which, you know, could mean anything. But when your opponent tries to sound like you, at least most of the time, and then any setback could be blamed on Russian election fixtures. And then you could wave these ridiculous reports. And, you know, V-Square is just another organization financed by, we've seen. Now, I thought that the USAID was gone. Donald Trump promised that. the NED as well. Apparently, they're still going strong, and without these funds, a lot of these people would have no support at all. And it's just an absolute laughable claim. This is his whole campaign now, that we have to fight Russian influence. The GRU is here. But at this point, if you accept this, you accept it because you want to, or you're a total moron. You accept it because it's very convenient to accept it, not because there's any truth to it. And that's, you know, that's what it comes down to. Again, it's a psychological motive.
Well, the whole point of the National Endowment for Democracy is to meddle in elections, isn't it? They give out loads of money to various political parties around the world to try and get them to into power, because they know that that will be beneficial for America. How is that any different to this allegation of Russian fixers being over in Hungary to help Orbán win? And I really don't believe Orbán needs any help from Russia to win, because he is incredibly popular. Well, next we have the issue of fixing the polls. And this bit reminds me of what went on with Donald Trump in 2017, when Politico said there was something like a 99% chance of Hillary Clinton winning the election and 1% chance of Donald Trump winning. And that was reversed, basically. Well, Magyar allegedly holds a 9-point lead over Orbán, according to an aggregate of polls compiled by Politico. And again, just have a look at the Politico poll in 2017 for Trump v. Clinton. However, the polling organizations showing the clearest advantage to Magyar are those affiliated with the opposition or funded by the EU. The 21 Research Center, which is financed by the European Commission, has Tijar leading Fidesz 49% to 37%. The IDEA Institute, which has accepted European Union and National Endowment for Democracy money, shows Magyar's party leading 48% to 38%. Median, which was founded by a member of the liberal SZDSZ party, links to the opposition HVG newspaper, shows Tijar beating Fidesz by 55% to 35%. And you've written here, Matt, why are so many liberals running polling agencies? Polls do not reflect public opinion. They create it. And of course, that's what they're trying to do. That's what they were trying to do during the Trump campaign against Clinton. Keep in mind that Magyar, in his unsuccessful campaign for the European Union legislature in 2024, received just 30% of the vote. So 2 years ago, he just got 30%, and now they're pretending that he's going to get 60%. Despite the rosy polling, many, in quotes, EU leaders secretly believe that an Orbán victory is likely, Politico has reported. Hungarian EU Affairs Minister Janos Boka told them that he believes that by sponsoring one-sided polling, Magyar and his allies in Brussels are building the narrative that if they lose the election, then this is an illegitimate result. The fact that the European Commission extended its RSS, its rapid response measures, until 1 week after Election Day is no coincidence. The EU is preparing to fight a long and bloody battle to win its decade-long war on Orbán and bring Hungary back under its control. So the same as when Trump had the election stolen from him, and all the social media companies literally banned anybody putting any information up that showed that the election was fixed, ballot stuffing, hiding of ballots, bringing ballots in the middle of the night in boxes. All those videos were removed instantly. And that's the same thing that they've done here. They've got this RSS measure to keep working until a week after the election, which means that if Orbán doesn't win the election and then says, look, there are all these dodgy things that went on, anybody alleging these dodgy dealings and showing evidence of it, they can just be removed from social media. To me, it seems very similar to what they did to Trump. I think it was in 2021. I mean, that's exactly what they did. They just censored anybody that presented evidence to show that the election was fixed. Hey, Matt, what do you make here of what's going on with the polling?
Well, I distinctly remember it wasn't just Politico saying that Trump has no chance. You know, he was pretty much apolitical before 2016. He kind of came from out of nowhere. I mean, I grew up, you know, because I'm from the New York area with news reports about him, but never political. But yeah, there's liberals who run these polling agencies. And I think the point of, you know, lying about this or exaggerating this is to keep Orban's people home. Oh, okay, there's no point. Yeah, like it says, create the narrative that you know, if he wins, it's completely illegitimate. And they will do something about it with glowing media support. And it's to generally demoralize supporters of Fidesz and Orban specifically. It didn't work in the U.S. I remember, I'm almost positive we spoke about it at some length. About what polls really are. And yeah, I was happy to report that and he actually, even prior to that, did worse in other elections, you know, getting, I think he had 13% in one. It's the exact same playbook. But if the media builds him up and builds him up and builds him up, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if there's an assassination attempt that they could blame on the Russians. That's conceivable. So, and yet still, with all of this, Politico admits that Orban's victory is likely.
I was just going to say, what this also reminds me of Belarus. Do you remember in Belarus when they were saying that, I've just looked her name up here, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya was going to win the election, and she had masses of support and everybody was supporting her, and it was definitely that she was going to win the election. And then Viktor Lukashenko, he won the election, and straight away the EU said, oh, that election was totally illegitimate. It was Svetlana who really won this election. Obviously it had to be her because look how much support there was for her. And it was all entirely manufactured. And they were even referring to this Svetlana. I saw interviews with her on the BBC referring to her as, oh, First Lady of Belarus, Madam President. And she was nothing. Is it the same with Juan Guaido in Venezuela when they claimed that he was the real president of Venezuela when there was no support for him? They do this so many times, and you have to watch it for a few years just to see it repeating. Matt, what are your final thoughts on this? You must remember Svetlana Tikhanovskaya.
All you have to do is look at her. All I did at the time in Belarus was look at her YouTube page. She had 100,000 subscribers. That was her foundation, was, you know, being a social media star. They simply built her up from nothing. So I can guarantee you that the regime is not going to go quietly here. Orban has been a thorn in their side for a long time. They want him out. You have essentially a wounded animal in the cornered. What's the animal going to do? And anything is possible here. So there's not going to be a rational response, and like the author says, long and bloody battle. Yeah, and they're going to continue that with this new Magyar that they took out of nothing and made him into a star. I think, you know, he has a support, but whether that's going to be registered at the polls and results, that's another matter.
Well, I'll say now, I think Viktor Orban is going to win again. And then I think the EU is going to say that it was an illegitimate election and that it was all Russian meddling. And that's why he won. They just will not accept the fact that a lot of people don't support the EU's policies. And a lot of people are finding it very difficult to actually pay for their shopping and to pay for their electricity and to pay for their gas in the rest of Europe because of the EU's policies. And of course, in Hungary, Hungary's got that exception. So Hungary can still get its gas and its oil from Russia. So it's still paying cheap prices for its fuel. And that is thanks to Orban. And I think just that alone is going to be why he's going to win the next election. But we'll have to wait and see. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.